Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we have details on the curfew issued by the state of California in Purple Tier counties, including San Diego. Find out what you can and can't do on today's show. Plus, hear about the county's crackdown on businesses and churches defying the ban on indoor operations and mask wearing, including cease and desist letters issued by the county's top public health officer to entities in El Cajon over the objections of Mayor Bill Wells. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have the latest from Washington, D.C., as pressure mounts on President Donald Trump to concede the presidential election and allow federal agencies to provide critical information to the transition team for President-elect Joe Biden. Our newsmaker interview today is with Harvey Wasserman. He's a journalist and author who is an expert on election integrity issues. He'll be talking about concerns in the 2020 election, the Georgia recount, and the upcoming Senate runoff races that could determine the balance of power in the U.S. Senate. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. California's Department of Public Health has issued a curfew starting Saturday, November 21st through December 21st from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. It's intended to reduce the spread of COVID-19 as cases surge statewide. The limited stay-home order applies in purple-tier counties, including San Diego. Between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m., the order prohibits gatherings with people not in your household, either on your property or anywhere else. Non-essential businesses must cease operations during those curfew hours, and only activities defined as critical infrastructure may continue. The curfew does not prohibit people in the same household from leaving home, however, as long as they don't interact with people from other households. So you can still walk your dog, exercise alone or with those in your household, ride your horse, or travel for essential purposes such as medical visits, picking up food, or going to the pharmacy. The curfew also does not apply to people who are homeless. The county has also beefed up enforcement efforts this week, with many cease and desist orders issued in East County. That includes El Cajon, despite the mayor's pledge not to enforce county health rules. COVID-19 cases increased 50% in California during the first week of November, causing the state on Monday to put counties with 94% of the state's population into the most restrictive purple tier, shutting down indoor operations for restaurants, bars, gyms, theaters, places of worship, and more. Schools that have not yet reopened cannot do so at this time. Retailers and shopping centers have to cut capacity to 25%. Dr. Mark Gailey, California's Health and Human Services Secretary, says taking these hard temporary actions now could help prevent future shutdowns. Governor Gavin Newsom says the state is sounding the alarm, adding it's crucial that we act to decrease transmission and slow hospitalizations before the death count surges. Last week, the state also issued a travel advisory, along with Oregon and Washington, urging residents to avoid travel if possible over this Thanksgiving weekend and to self-quarantine for 14 days after returning if you do leave the state. Earlier this week, San Diego recorded its highest ever number of cases, 1,087 in a single day, triple the number just 3 weeks ago. The seven-day average has risen to 829, a new pandemic record. The hospitalization rate has also spiked, and nearly five deaths a day are occurring locally, including victims as young as in their 30s this week. With case rates also soaring locally, San Diego officials have beefed up enforcement, issuing 52 cease and desist orders this week for businesses and churches that were defying the ban on indoor operations and/or rules requiring masks and social distancing. Many East County businesses received cease and desist orders in recent days, including some in the city of El Cajon, despite El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells publicly stating that his city's police are not prioritizing enforcement of shutdown orders or other health regulations. But Sheriff Bill Gore announced that he is sending enforcement teams across the region, which will first encourage compliance, but will issue citations if necessary, and those could include criminal penalties or shutdown of businesses. Mayor Wells denounced the county's actions in an interview with KUSI. He likened the county enforcement efforts in his city to Big Brother, adding, "I don't know of a time when the sheriff has superseded his city's way of doing things." East County businesses issued cease and desist orders for violations in November include the Element Dance Center in La Mesa, Major's Diner in Pine Valley, RSD Boxing in Spring Valley, Don's Cocktail Lounge in El Cajon, the Eastbound Bar and Grill in Lakeside, Janet's Cafe in Santee, Chew's Gym in Santee, Foothills Church in the city of El Cajon, The Landing in El Cajon, and Meat Monsters Grill in Ramona. In late October, the county also issued cease and desist letters to fraternities and sororities planning parties at San Diego State University, as well as to strip clubs and some other businesses. On social media, local residents vented frustrations on both sides of the issue. La Mesa Councilwoman Christina Licio expressed disgust over the enforcement crackdown on businesses such as Major's Diner, whose owner has said he can't stay in business with outside-only service in temperatures dipping into the 30s. She noted that Pine Valley has only had 12 COVID cases since March when the pandemic began. "It's cold," she says. "They can't do outside dining. Everyone has gone insane." But others voiced support for ramped-up efforts to control the virus and expressed frustration at those who were flouting the rules. Ann Craig Tillman posted on Facebook, "I'm so sick and tired of selfish, self-entitled people who refuse to do what's right for their fellow human beings. Stay safer at home," she concluded. "Save a life. Wear the damn mask." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
Incredibly damaging messages being sent to the rest of the world about how democracy functions.
President-elect Joe Biden warned yesterday that waiting much longer to begin the official transition is going to have wide-reaching implications, from issues of national security to a vaccine distribution plan. As President Donald Trump continues disputing the election results, Biden called him among, quote, the most irresponsible presidents in history.
And I think most of the Republicans I've spoken to, including some of the governors, think this is debilitating. It sends a horrible message about who we are as a country.
Certification deadlines in crucial battleground states are looming. After completing the recount and reaffirming Biden's win, Georgia's results become official today, followed by Pennsylvania and Michigan on Monday. David Levine with the Alliance for Securing Democracy hopes that once Wisconsin's partial recount and other states' audits are complete, the partisan battle over the results will die down.
I'm hopeful that as more states certify results, right, conduct audits of the elections, so we go further on through the process, that there can be more people, even if their preferred candidates didn't win, they will understand that, in fact, the outcome was legitimate. The process was legitimate.
News came out that Trump called and thanked one of the Wayne County Republican officials who attempted, without success, to rescind her vote to certify results in Detroit. Trump invited GOP leader of the Michigan Senate, Mike Shirkey, for a meeting at the White House today. Some conservative groups in Michigan have reportedly begun urging lawmakers to overturn the results and send a slate of electors in favor of Trump to the Electoral College next month. Earlier this week, Shirkey said, quote, "That's not going to happen." Governor Gretchen Whitmer, a Democrat, pointed out that Biden's margin in Michigan was 14 times Trump's margin in 2016.
Stop spending energy to mislead about what happened in this election and spend it on a real COVID relief package. That's what the people of our country need more than ever. This election was overwhelmingly decided. It was a safe, it was a secure, it was a fair election.
And progressive Democrats held a rally with masks and social distancing outside the Democratic National Committee headquarters, urging the Biden administration to keep its promises on climate change, racial justice, and other key issues. Here's Jamal Bowman, incoming representative in New York.
Black and brown communities organized across the country to make sure Joe Biden won the White House. And he did that. But now it's time for payback. And now it's time to make sure that we invest the resources necessary to rebuild our nation in a way that is representative of all of us, so we can truly have the people's house.
The two Georgia runoff elections that will determine which party controls the Senate are drawing huge financial attention from across the country. $125 million have flowed into the state. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service and produced for television by Free Speech TV, I'm Lily Bulkey. Thanks for listening.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine, and I'm here today with Harvey Wasserman, who is one of the National Election Protection Experts. Harvey's a prominent journalist. He's a historian. And Harvey, you have co-authored with Mr. Fatrakis some books on election integrity. You were very involved in the Ohio election back in 2004. You've done all kinds of things there with Free Press, Radio Free Press. You've won some journalism awards. And you're here today to talk to us about the integrity of the 2020 presidential election.
Well, actually, the government agencies have come forward and said that this was the best, cleanest, and best run election in U.S. history. And amazing enough, I have to agree.
And you've certainly seen a lot. So tell us what's happened between 2004 and today that should give Americans more confidence in the outcome of this election.
Well, basically one word: paper. This election has been almost entirely on paper. Massive, of course, vote by mail ballots, paper ballots that people have been able, like me, haven't been able to mark by hand. I live in LA. California, as you know, made the decision to mail out paper ballots to all registered voters, which is exactly what needs to happen with our elections. I got my ballot in the mail. I marked it up and I went to the library and put it in a Dropbox. And that was it. I mean, no standing in line, but most importantly, a tangible paper ballot that that did not require a touchscreen machine that, which we used to call push and pray.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. You may not know this, but back in 2005, I had interviewed a whistleblower inside the Diebold Election Company who told me how they were literally rigging touchscreen paperless voting machines in Georgia back then.
Exactly. And it happened in Florida in 2000, happened, all over the place in 2016. The reason that Trump did not like vote by mail is exactly that. It's much harder to rig an election. Now, there are ways you can do it. The number one way you can rig election on vote by mail is to have your people in the election boards who do the screening for the paper ballots. Just throw them out,
Or decide the signature doesn't match, something like that. But they can't just have an entire race all be flipping on these electronic tabulators or electronic voting machines quite as easily as they could with the paperless ones, where the guy I interviewed, they were putting in a card supposedly to fix the clock in these voting machines, only the clocks weren't broken. And voila, everywhere they did it, it was flipping, in that case, historically Democratic districts to suddenly vote Republican for the first time in 100 years.
So what happened was in 2004, I was teaching history at two colleges, and my cohort, whose bio you started to read, Bob Petrakis, is a political scientist. Now, I wouldn't have known that the election was being stolen. I'm a historian, he was calling me every day. We had been writing together for more than 10 years, and he was calling me every day and saying, look, this, this, and this, and he'd send me a memo, and I'd write up the articles. And we were writing in the lead up to the 2004 election all the different things that the Republicans were doing to steal the thing. And Ohio in 2004 is what decided the Electoral College. And so in the week before the election, we put out a piece called 11 Ways That George W. Bush Is Stealing the 2004 Election. And it was number one on the worldwide internet. People just we couldn't believe it. But there it was. And in the middle of the night, on election night 2004, from 12:20 until 2 in the morning, they stopped counting. And the votes, which were all electronic, were being, except maybe for a couple of absentee, they stopped counting. At 12:20 at night, we had screenshot from CNN showing John Kerry winning very handily, Ohio, by more than a couple hundred thousand votes.
Yeah.
and at 4.2%. And miraculously, at 2 in the morning, after this two-hour and 40-minute gap, Bush was winning 2.5%. It was a 6.7% shift. And we did a chart that in the 11 major swing states, there was this giant red shift.
Yeah. So how did you determine that it was actually fraud and not just a bunch of late votes coming in that just happened to be for George Bush?
Well, Ohio is a test market. And apparently Bush and Cheney and Dick Cheney and Karl Rove decided to try everything they could try in the Ohio test market. And they did 100 different things, which Bob is a political scientist. Bob had been in El Salvador in the 1980s and was an election monitor there. And a lot of the stuff that he saw in El Salvador, he saw again in Ohio. And they were very creative. There were precincts that were heavily Spanish-speaking. They were by law required to provide Spanish-speaking poll workers, and they didn't. In some places, they used scanners, you know, the little file cards. Mm-hmm. They would run them through machines, and in some precincts, they gave people pencils that did not show up on the scanning machines.
Interesting.
They misled people to precincts. The Ohio Secretary of State's, who was very much in on it all, website had incorrect addresses for precincts. My favorite was he called a press conference. And he announced that all ballots, all applications for ballots had to be on 80-pound paper, right? The applications, which is a very heavy paper.
Yeah.
But the applications in his office were 60-pound. So if you went to the Secretary of State, you filled out the form that he gave you for a ballot, it would be thrown out.
Now, am I remembering correctly, wasn't Cuyahoga County, Ohio, the one where they actually convicted a couple of people who worked in the registrar's office for fraud? As I recall, they found like little orange stickers stuck over the punch card holes for John Kerry's name so that they would scan as no votes.
Yes, they did. You know, they picked a couple of course, black women who work in Cuyahoga County, which is primarily Democratic, and mm-hmm. made them the scapegoats. You know, just like in the 2008 crash. If you saw The Big Short, trillions of dollars were stolen, and they convicted one non-white accountant.
I recall the judge said in that case that he suspected somebody higher up was involved, but they
couldn't. Oh, yeah, right. So, you know, small detail. So, it was an absolute travesty what happened in Ohio 2004. We had already had reports from Florida 2000. Greg Pallast, who went in and showed how the voter rolls were stripped. Bev Harris had showed how the electronic machines were flipped. This is called strip and flip. So Bob and I have written 6 books on this. The last one being the strip and flip disaster of America's stolen elections. We've seen it all. I mean, there were just myriad ways to steal an election, and no one will listen to us. You know, we were told all your crackpots and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So repeat it. We were never attacked by the Republicans. The Republicans couldn't have cared less.
Always the Republicans actually that were generally the ones accused of doing the rigging and in a few cases caught red-handed at it, basically. So for this election, it's the opposite. We've had a Republican president, Donald Trump, claiming it's a stolen election. But so far, he's had, a dozen court cases, and they've all been thrown out, I think, at this point, right. Haven't they? Mm-hmm. He hasn't seemed to find any evidence of this. I mean, are you aware of any, just in general, looking across all the states he's challenging, is there any basis at all for this that you've seen?
Well, you got to remember this. The Democrats still steal elections, but they steal the primaries. and then they come around and the Republicans and stealing the general elections.
Now, I have to ask, challenge that statement. So how do you believe Democrats have stolen primaries?
Well, basically by disenfranchising hundreds of thousands of progressive voters, primarily in New York. They did it in Brooklyn.
Okay, so in other words, they're trying to get more moderate Democrats elected in your
Very specifically, they got rid of Bernie Sanders. And, you know, and you, as you recall, this summer, Bernie had this huge movement going. And then suddenly he lost the key primaries and he was gone, like within a matter of 2 weeks. And, you know, I have written a book called The People's Spiral of U.S. History. It's a history of the United States. And I had this happy ending as of summer where Bernie Sanders was going to march in and change the world.
Well, it didn't happen.
I said, no.
Obviously, you know, any form of election manipulation, rigging, I think we would all agree is wrong, regardless of who it favors. But fast forward to today and the challenges that we're hearing, Trump's claims of it isn't about stuff leading up to the election. It basically has to do, as I understand it, with the counting of the votes that were actually cast, whether those were machine votes, whether those were mail-in votes. So how confident are you in the accuracy of the results of those votes that were actually cast in this election, setting aside for a moment those folks that were disenfranchised?
Pretty good this year. Let me explain it. There's a trifecta involved. Mm-hmm. It's the registration rolls, then it's the vote by mail, and then it's the counting of the votes.
Yeah.
Okay. So the registration rolls this year, it was not good. They stripped 16.5 million people, according to the Election Assistance Commission in Washington.
I know Greg Palast had done some research on that, and he found that they were, in this case, Republicans were disenfranchising voters, claiming they had moved, and yet a lot of these were longtime residents, primarily Black minority voters. It appeared to be a variation on that theme of different middle initial, same name, duplicate voters that they got caught doing a few years ago.
And they decided if you haven't, there's no federal law on this, but they decided if you haven't voted in the last two elections, then they can throw you off the voter rolls, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it could even be two elections in the same year if you've got an early, you know, early and then a later vote, as has happened in primaries in Wisconsin and so on. They'll throw you off. And there's no reason to throw people off except if you want to get rid of Black and brown voters and also college students. And so, you know, the registration rolls were stripped. That was a problem. But we understood, because we had the prior experience, there's a big movement to re-register people. Now, I don't know exactly how successful it was, but it did make a difference. No doubt about it.
Yeah, a lot of them did.
Okay. Then the second part is vote by mail. And we know that Trump literally went in and destroyed as much of the Postal Service as he could to make sure people couldn't get their ballots and they couldn't get them back in.
Yeah, putting William DeJoy in charge of it, who actually has a conflict of interest, essentially. He's worked for a competitor of the post office before.
Yes. And so, you know, this kind of thing, the things that were done to the Postal Service were just terrible and done very deliberately. Nobody made any bones about it. And at the end, I did a major piece that there were 300,000 votes missing that had been marked coming, 300,000 votes that had been marked coming into the post office, but were never tracked back to the voting board. So somewhere,
which state did that occur in, or was it multiple states?
It was a number of them. There was a federal judge in D.C., Judge Sullivan, who jumped in. Mm-hmm. He was initially a Bush appointee and then a Clinton appointee at the higher court, and demanded that DeJoy find these 300,000 votes, sweep, and then take them into the election boards. And DeJoy refused. You know, he didn't do it. And there was a big fight because, as you know, Trump was pushing to have all votes counted on Election Day and to eliminate any vote that came in after Election Day.
Well, and we should add that he was encouraging Republicans, his supporters, his base, to go in and vote in person in the polls. He was downplaying concerns about the virus, whereas many Democrats were more concerned about the virus, you know, social distancing at polls, and therefore more apt to be voting by mail. So very troubling.
Well, vote by mail is a great thing. You know, we've had five states doing it since the 80s. It started with Oregon, Washington, Utah, Colorado, and Hawaii have all been doing this. And then during the election, during the campaign, Nevada and California also decided to to mail everybody a ballot. And I think it happened in a couple other states as well.
Yeah, well, here in San Diego, do you know that something like 10 times as many people voted by mail as in the polls?
Yeah, why not?
You know, very few people actually voted in the polls. So that means actually even most of the Republicans were mailing in their votes down here.
Part of the funny thing, you know, Trump is just everything just turns to death. And it was pointed out to him at some point that, hey, Donald, more Republicans vote by mail than Democrats because they're elderly. But suddenly in the middle, he said, it's okay to vote absentee, but not vote by mail.
Crazy. It's the same thing. Yeah. Well, the odd thing is that here in San Diego, while the city is very blue, the rural areas are not. And out in East County, what we've been seeing is the opposite of the national trend, where the late returns that are coming in are actually favoring the conservatives. We've seen a couple of races flip here to the more conservative candidate. So it seems like saying those shouldn't be counted, he would have wound up with, you know, Democrats in some of these down tier races, or perhaps less conservative, not party endorsed, Republicans. It's in a way, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But let's talk about Georgia. So we've said in these other states so far, the lawsuits haven't, you know, they just haven't held up. More and more are getting thrown out. Now, Georgia, we have a Secretary of State, a Republican Secretary of State, who rather inexplicably announced he's going to go back and recount every single vote cast in the state. How confident or troubled should one be about this process that's going to play out in Georgia?
I think it's fine. That's the beauty of paper ballots. The third part of the trifecta is actually the counting of the ballots. And we've also had a revolution. That you have to consider the vote by mail as a revolutionary development to this extent. It's been 5% absentee. That's actually how I got involved in this issue also, because I was in Columbus, living in the same house for 20 years. And then I got a note that they were not going to send me an absentee ballot because I didn't want to vote on touchscreens. And I wound up calling them four times. Finally, they sent me a ballot and I filled it out and sent it in, which was great. Mm-hmm. This year, we've had 80% nationwide of the ballots come in either by mail or people have personally dropped them off in drop boxes like I did, or at precincts.
Yeah, here you could drop off at any library. It was really convenient. You didn't have to go to a polling place. You didn't have to drive for most of us far away if we lived anywhere near a library. So.
Yes. Well, you'll be glad to know in the states of Texas and Ohio, the secretaries of state limited drop box distribution to one per county. Crazy. There are more than 4 million people in Harris County, which is Houston in Texas, one drop box.
Crazy.
There's a 1.3 million in Franklin County, which is Columbus, Ohio. Again, one drop box. You only do that if you want to make it hard to vote. But, you know, here in California, we have plenty of drop boxes. So Georgia, for all its craziness, got almost all its ballots on paper. And so the way that we have gone with this is that there are machines now that we do trust if we can get the source code and if they do not have modems in them, if they're not going to the internet.
These do Georgia's measure up to that standard?
No. That's why I'm happy to have a paper ballot count. Yeah. These are digital scanning machines. Okay. And what happens is you take the ballot, you scan it in, it creates a digital image, an electronic image. And when it comes time to count the ballots, you can count the digital images in a matter of moments. That's why we had a very rapid result in Florida, because Florida did that almost entirely. You can have, technically, you can have it in a matter of seconds. But and Florida also pre-processed their ballots. When the ballots came in Florida, every day the poll workers would open the envelopes, flatten them out, and run them through the machines. So by election day morning in Florida, you could have had a result. Then they just all did everything with that day's voting, and they had a result very quickly. In Georgia, it was a hodgepodge. The Secretary of State ordered up some of these ridiculous Dominion machines, spent $100 million on it. It was a complete disaster. But people still voted by mail and with paper ballots. The other thing is, if people insist on coming in person, which they did with early voting, many, many people just came in early.
Yeah.
They may not have gotten their ballots, they knew because of what we were doing, not to trust mailing them back in. So you had millions literally all over the country of going in early. And in many cases, the vote, early voting window was 2-3 weeks, some places more. So that worked out great. But the bottom line in Georgia, as you asked, is that there are paper ballots. If people want to, if the Secretary of State wants to have people sitting there counting them by hand, fine. You know, as long as they're nonpartisan and we can make sure that the counting is done correctly.
Observed.
Not to believe that. Another thing happened, Miriam, in this election, which was revolutionary. As I mentioned, the shift to paper ballots is huge. The shift to vote by mail is huge. There was the use of these digital scanners is also huge. And we had an epic, monumental, generational shift in the in poll workers. Because traditionally, as you know, it's mostly elderly people who go in and work the polls.
They're in the garage very often. Yeah.
Yeah. You get a day's pay. It's a long day. I mean, you know, it's hard work. But traditionally, it's been like a big AARP gathering among the people who are counting the ballots. But this year, because of the COVID, elderly people wouldn't go in. And there was a point where it looked like we were not going to have anywhere near enough poll workers. And then all of a sudden, millennials and even Generation Z kids started to become poll workers. You know, it's a day's pay. They had come off the marches, the George Floyd marches. In some places, you had 15, 16, 17-year-old kids working the polls.
Wow, which I didn't know that.
It's a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were some places where the demand was so high that they actually let the kids work only if they had good grades. You know, it was you know, kind of cool. And there was one restriction, which I support, which is you could only work the polls in the precincts where you lived. This prevented outliers from, you know, flooding in and, you know, being jerks and you know, throwing out ballots from the opposite party. But so this was a big deal this year. And so listen, and this guy, Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, is very corrupt and not a good guy. And he did he did an insider deal. Like I said, he got the state to spend $100 million on these machines, was completely worthless. And the guy who got the contract had been an assistant to the current governor. It was a total graft, you know, situation, ripoff.
But yet they do have the paper trail, at least. Yeah. There is a way to go back and check them.
Fine. They want to sit there and count the ballots, fine with me. And the great thing is that we have the ballots to count.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We just saw where the attorneys who were involved in the Bush versus Gore case, the Supreme Court decision that handed that election to Bush, have come out and said they don't really see a path forward for President Trump at this point, which is a pretty big deal.
Well, you have a situation where you have a so-called conservative Republican president who is so abominable that even the conservative Republicans can't stand it. And there is technically a legal path, a very clear legal path. And I've written about this for Reader Supported News, where Donald Trump could become president. There is nothing, and we have to change this, by the way. I'm devoting the next 4 years of my life to changing the electoral system. And the Constitution of the United States says absolutely nothing about a popular vote involved in the choosing of the president. The state legislatures are empowered by the Constitution to choose the electors, to go to the Electoral College to choose the president.
So in other words, what he's been trying to do is get enough states, say red states, that maybe flip blue, to substitute electors that would not vote for who the people chose or who got the most electors for the state, but instead substitute in Trump loyalists who would just cast their votes for him no matter what.
By law, he could do this. Now, there are state laws that have since been passed and this and that. But if you go straight to the Constitution, like these right-wing judges on the Supreme Court say they believe in, you can give Trump the presidency.
Do you think there's very much chance that that could actually happen?
Well, no. And I've written a piece about this, again, at Reader Supported News, because too many states and too many votes. Mm-hmm. You know, if he had won, if Biden had won just by Pennsylvania or just by maybe Pennsylvania and Arizona, you know, two, Trump would need four states. He's not going to be able to flip four states.
Right.
And he lost by 5 million votes. And to tell you how bad our system is and how desperately we need to change it. In 2016, Trump lost the popular vote by almost 3 million. In 2020, he lost the popular vote by more than 5 million.
Yeah.
So there's an 8 million gap in votes between the two elections. And yet, in 2016, he got 306 electoral votes. And in 2020, Biden got 306 electoral votes.
Yeah, that's a, that's another whole argument about whether the Electoral College should be abolished. Yeah. I mean, but it's been years since the popular vote getter actually, right. You know.
Well, you've had five or six instances where, depending on how you count the election of 1800, where there was some popular voting. And where John Adams, where there was popular voting, John Adams actually won. But the three-fifths bonus in 1800 gave the Electoral College to Thomas Jefferson. But since then, there have been five elections where the guy who won the popular vote or the woman, I'm so glad to be able to say that, failed to win the election. And it could have happened this year. If it had been closer in the Electoral College,
yeah.
If Biden had only won by the 20 votes in Pennsylvania, plus maybe the 11 in Arizona, and then Trump could have gone in and gotten those legislatures, which are heavily Republican,
yeah,
flip.
Now, I'd like to ask you a question. We know, of course, that Biden is up by about 5 million votes nationally, but even in these close states, these key swing states, it wasn't really that close, right? I mean,
some of them were. Wisconsin's pretty close, Arizona's pretty close, and Georgia's pretty close.
Okay. But that's when we say close, we're still talking thousands, maybe tens of thousands of votes in some of these. I mean,
maybe less than 5,000.
What's the most votes you've ever seen flip in a recount, a statewide recount?
The recounts don't flip very many.
I understood it's not more than a few hundred is what I've read. Is that accurate?
And probably that will be the case this year.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of the balloting.
So when people are saying he really doesn't have very much chance, this is why. They read the tea. They're not just reading tea leaves. They're reading history.
Well, there's another dimension. There's another dimension as well, that he is so deeply hated by so many people all the way deep into the right wing.
Yeah,
that they won't let it happen. He's even offended the military. How a right wing conservative manages to offend the military? I mean, it's like,
well, when you call them, you know, losers and or whatever all the names were that he came
suckers,
up with, suckers, you know, and losers. Yeah,
you know, bones. Think and he evaded the draft. You know, he's just if I wrote a political novel and invented Donald Trump, no one would believe it.
No. Maybe insulting, former POW, former presidential nominee, John McCain in Arizona, which turned out to be one of those swing states he barely lost, was not one of his better moves.
No. We can go on about Donald Trump. You could say that he was sent down or sent up to teach us a lesson. You know, my line about Donald Trump, and I'm quite serious about this, and I actually held a kind of a ritual on one of our calls, our Zoom calls, to do election protection, to basically say that Donald Trump has been the embodiment of all the horrible dictators that the United States has put in place in countries around the world, and that he is payback for our imperial arrogance and cruelty. And I had people shout out the names of various dictators that we have put in power who have slaughtered and ripped off and just destroyed their countries, like Pinochet in Chile or mm-hmm. Somoza in Nicaragua or Suharto in Indonesia, Mobutu in the Congo. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. So that felt really good. And I'm convinced that's the reason he lost. So, you know,
karma.
Karma. It's karma. And he has certainly taught
America. Well, some have said that in Georgia, given that one of those counties that really put Georgia over the edge for Biden was the district that was formerly represented by Congressman John Lewis, the civil rights leader who recently passed, who Trump insulted after he was dead. So again, another, you know, maybe not the smartest political move.
I am now very strongly advocating that he be removed immediately under the 25th Amendment. I mean, the damage he's doing to the fight against the COVID, people are dying because of him.
He's also gutted the military leader or the Pentagon leadership. Right. He's replacing top military leaders, generals. I just saw an article in the New York Times that asks, "Are we being invaded?" Apparently, American ships up off Alaska are having these kind of frightening interchanges with Russian vessels. So it's very troubling. Well,
you could argue that his motive has been to prepare to put his own people with the military so he could stage a coup. But and you know, that would make perfect sense, but he does not have enough popular support to do that. To pull off a coup like that in this country
would be very difficult.
Way more. And that's the article I just wrote. Basically, Trump is America's biggest loser. 21 incumbents in the American presidency have been reelected, and 10, counting him now, have lost. No former president of the United States has gone to prison. And, you know, he's going to have to leave the country. He even if he gets a federal pardon, they don't hold up on the states.
That's true. The New York prosecutor is gearing up, and there's a very good chance that he could be arrested and prosecuted as soon as he leaves office, which may be why one reason why he's tried so hard to cling to power. So you're right. His only his best hope may be to leave the country and or seek a country that does not have an extradition agreement with the United States.
He could go to maybe Saudi Arabia or maybe Russia, although, you know, I'm not sure Putin would want him anymore.
Might not be too useful to him these days.
No, they have a really great gulag in Russia that he could be, you know, put up in. But
maybe there's a Dachau in Siberia awaiting him somewhere.
Yes.
We should also talk about the balance of power in the Senate that hangs in the balance right now. Yeah. You have written that control of the Senate will hinge on two Georgia special elections, and specifically on election protection. We've got two Republican senators up for re-election. If they were to both lose, and that's a pretty tall order, but if they were to both lose and Democrats won, then Kamala Harris, the vice president under Biden, would be casting the tie-breaking vote on key things. Tell us what kind of election protection needs to happen in Georgia, and how confident are you that, you know, that this will be honest? Are the votes going to be tallied and counted the same way as they were in the presidential election? Are they mailing out ballots? I mean, what's going on there?
This is all up for grabs, and there's a big fight going on. And but the point is, we've had 20 years of practice now to protect an election. And people led by Stacey Abrams and a wonderful activist named Andrea Miller are prepared to go into to Georgia and really make sure that the election is run properly. Number one is the voter registration rolls. How many people have been stripped from the voter registration rolls? We don't know that. And we have until early December, about 3 weeks, two, 3 weeks, to get people registered and re-registered in Georgia.
And if people aren't sure they're registered, I imagine they can check with their registrar of voters to make sure their registration's valid and re-register if they got dropped for some reason.
Exactly. And, you know, we have two Senate races. I say that the odds on the Democrats winning them are not good. But in both races, the reason we're having runoffs is that Georgia law says you got to get 50%.
Right. So it was a primary to fill a vacancy. And essentially, the primary was held the same time as the general election in November. You're right. Federal law says they have to run off.
Yes. But the problem that the Democrats has is in both races, there were third party candidates. And if you add the third party from the right, and if you add the third party vote into the Republican vote, they win handily.
So I'm glad you said that. So in other words, if we get an announcement that Republicans won, Democrats shouldn't think that there was trickery or cheating. It's more likely simply that, you know, these were conservative districts. And
this will be the most thoroughly and intelligently scrutinized election in American history, because you now have an army of aware election protection activists who are all going to pour into Georgia, and everybody's going to, they're either by, you know, personally or you know, virtually. And we're actually hearing people ask that people not come physically to Georgia. I mean, the people in Georgia are going to be inundated. That's not going to be a real popular situation. And but we are certainly encouraging people to scrutinize and to support the people in Georgia. So this will be extremely well monitored and scrutinized. And there's a great irony here. Tip O'Neill said all politics are local, and there's always a curveball in any election. And in this case, the Public Service Commission of Georgia is a very powerful organization, and its members are popularly elected. And the PSC in Georgia is what sets the rates for the electric power in Georgia. And Georgia has been the victim of the construction of the last two atomic power reactors in the United States. There are two reactors at Vogtle in Georgia that have been under construction since Obama unfortunately allowed an $8.3 billion federal loan to be extended to build these two reactors. And they are an absolute catastrophe. They're not, they've been under construction for more than 10 years. They are not even finished yet. And the price on these two reactors total has gone up to $30 billion. These two reactors are about to bankrupt the state of Georgia.
Wow.
And the PSC is going to decide what the rate situation is going to be. And there is a race for the PSC that is going to be down ballot on this Senate race. And what's going to happen is Georgia Power, whose future is totally wrapped up in these two ridiculous nuclear power plants, is going to be pouring millions of dollars in to elect their guy to the Public Service Commission. And it could have a major impact on the senatorial races.
Yeah, sure. People are turning out to vote for that or against that.
Right. So it's one of those twists of fate. These are literally the last nuclear power plants that will be built in the United States.
Yeah, we just had, of course, San Onofre, the major fiasco here in San Diego. Well, it's technically in Orange County, but it provided a lot of the power for San Diego. And, you know, when they found out there were leaks of radiation, there was a real fear here that we could have had a catastrophic.
California, unfortunately, all of California lives day to day under the serious threat of a major disaster at Diablo Canyon, the two atomic reactors at San Luis Obispo. And we have looked very, very hard at Diablo Canyon. I was arrested there actually in 1984.
We should add that, you're also an anti-nuclear activist in addition to your work on election integrity for folks that may not know that. Right. And certainly Fukushima certainly pointed up the dangers of what can happen if you have a major earthquake near a nuclear power plant.
Right. Well, I actually marched against Fukushima in Japan in 1976. And we warned at that time, they were about to open the most recent of the reactors at Fukushima Unit 4, and a 6 rather. And we warned, hey, say, listen, you know, I it was all in Japanese, but people told me, you're building two reactors on an earthquake, near earthquake faults, we're in an area that's been washed by tsunamis. What are you doing? And of course, you know, they said, oh, it'll never happen and blah, blah, blah. And exactly what we warned against happened, as at Chernobyl and as at Three Mile Island. We are warning now, but desperate. And really, I mean, I am terrified by Diablo Canyon. We know that it's embrittled. We know that there are all sorts of major problems. The governor refuses to even inspect them. We circulated a petition here in Los Angeles. 2,500 people signed this petition. It's actually online at solartopia.org and elsewhere, asking the governor not to shut Diablo, but just to inspect the thing.
Speaking of activism, if I could swing it back to the election integrity issues for a moment, Harvey, What actions can people out there who are listening or viewing this today, who are concerned about election integrity, do? How can they get involved to help protect the integrity of elections in their own communities?
All right. So we run a Zoom call every Monday. We're going to do it through the inauguration, and then we'll go bi-monthly. But every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific time, and we have 100 people or so, and we discuss all the various issues of election theft. We also have a website, grassrootsep.org, GRASSROOTSEP for election protection.org. Everything you need to know about election protection is on there, including the recordings of the Zoom calls that we've had. You know, here in California, there are tons of issues that we need to deal with, specifically ballot marking devices, delivery of ballots, things like that. But I have to say that this election in California was extremely well-run because the state made the correct decision to mail everybody an absentee ballot or a vote-by-mail ballot.
Yeah, as a news editor, I didn't have a single complaint from any reader this time about any trouble voting, harassment at the polls, because most of them weren't even at the polls, not getting ballots, not being able to vote. Well, and they even had a tracking system set up where you could go online and find out if your mail-in ballot or drop-off ballot had been received and you know, was going to be counted. So if they threw it out for a bad signature or something, you'd have a chance to do something about it.
Well, you'll be glad to know that I actually got a notice from the county, LA County, that my signature didn't match. So I have to send it back because I have just like everybody else, you know. You go to Ralph's, you scrawl it. But I'm going to sign it three different times, three different ways. And hopefully one of them will match. So, you know, but that's a good sign. I was happy that happened.
Yeah, I know. I did that too. I couldn't remember, am I registered with my middle initial or not? Gosh, I don't know. One way, you know, so I signed it both ways. And when I dropped it off, I said, is that okay? Or do I have to cross one of these out or do it over? And they said, no, it's California. This is all right. So,
So if you're interested, if you really want to get involved, which, you know, I'm going to do this for 4 years. I have a list of about 40 different items that we have to deal with. Number one, and this is another California thing, by the way. This is very important to understand. The top of the list is getting rid of the Electoral College. That's going to be a major problem because it is in the Constitution. Technically, to get rid of the Electoral College, we're going to have a constitutional amendment. And that's not going to happen because all these small states aren't going to want to let it happen.
Right.
Second on the agenda is gerrymandering. And we know that all over the country, gerrymandering is a nightmare and that these districts are being drawn to create totally safe districts for Republicans. And so...
Yeah, and we should point out that President Trump ended the census early, even though the Census Department was telling him they need more time, that they were not able to get into a lot of these neighborhoods because of COVID. I wonder, is that something that a President Biden could reopen and do something about to be sure everybody gets representation?
He should order a new census to happen in 22 after the COVID, God willing, is gone. Mm-hmm. And that would be perfectly legitimate and a good thing to do. But in the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Arizona, all these states that are about 50-50 Democrat Republican, you have Republican supermajorities in the legislatures. It's insane. The one state that really got rid of gerrymandering is California. Because what happened is the state was gerrymandered by the Democrats. And in 2006 and 2008, there were big movements to get rid of gerrymandering, and somebody very smart drew up a commission, which is nonpartisan, well, multipartisan, really. It has Democrats, it has Republicans, it has independents, right? And it's a good system. And in 26 and 28, we had statewide referenda for the assembly districts and then for the congressional districts. And you know who the primary financial supporter was that put it over the top?
No.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Because Schwarzenegger knew, and he's actually, you know, in many ways committed. He actually came out this year and was giving money to people to help, you know, protect the election. But Schwarzenegger knew that the state had been gerrymandered by the Democrats. And Nancy Pelosi opposed the installation of this commission, which actually works very well. And so for the next 4 years, I and a couple of other people are going to have a project to de-gerrymander all the states And it's going to have to be done by statewide referendums like California. And by and large, the public always votes to get rid of gerrymandering. The public in this country hates the Electoral College and hates
gerrymandering. Right. We want to believe that whatever the people want is what should happen in the elections, regardless of whether it's your own party or the other party or third party getting in there. It should be what the people in that district want to represent them.
Right. So, you know, I think we can pull that off. We got a massive switch to vote by mail this year, which I think was very popular and I think will stick. There are a couple of issues we have to have with, obviously, with the registration rolls and with the vote counting machines. These digital scanners, and you have a guy in San Diego, Ray Lutz, who LUTZ, who you should interview.
We've talked to him before, not recently, but yeah, he's with Citizens Oversight, and shout out to East County, our area. He's based right here in El Cajon. Yeah, he's been involved in a lot of things.
Well, he's tremendously powerful and really knows his stuff. You also have one of the great anti-nuclear people in the country also, Donna Gilmore, who lives just north of San Diego, very close to the San Onofre plant, by the way. And who
Ray Lutz actually was involved in fighting San Onofre, and he actually, his organization won a lawsuit to get money back for the ratepayers for some of that, you know, closure time that
you should also interview
SDG&E wanted charges for.
Interview Donna Gilmore, who knows more about the waste situation at San Onofre, which is terrifying, than anybody else.
Yeah, it is. That is enough for another whole show, another day, Harvey. But I'm going to let you have the final word today. We are running short on time. But what else would you like everybody listening or viewing out there to know about election integrity, particularly as it pertains to the 2020 elections?
I will tell you without hesitation that the reason Donald Trump lost this election is because of election protection. And had we not had 20 years of experience of fighting the theft of elections under our belt, Donald Trump would be headed to a second term. Just imagine that. And there are many, many things we need to do to clean up our election. But we made giant leaps this year. Come to grassrootsep.org. Come to our Monday Zoom calls. If you really want to get involved, you will hear a million different ways you can. And just remember that we have changed how this is done, and we've had immediate tangible impacts because of people like you, Miriam, who have finally taken the time to look at this issue. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Viewers, we've been speaking with Harvey Wasserman, and that website again is
grassrootsep.org.
EP for election protection. So grassrootsep.org, right. Very good. Thank you so much, Harvey, for joining us today on East County Magazine.
And I'm going to send you a free PDF of my People's Spiral of U.S. History. I think you'll like it.
I would love that. I'm a history fan. I really look forward to that. Thanks again.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, Kevin MacLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.